Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, back on another Mike Mitten, one with the Wilderness Chapter, the one he left us hanging on, the moose mauling. It, kind of a coincidence there. Today I was digging through some old pictures for a project, and I came across a picture of me it was the old school screen capture. Picture me on Sally Jesse Raphael, and someone I know, I'm not sure who it was, took a picture of me on the TV. So there's, you can see the frame of the TV around there, but brings a whole different meaning to screen capture compared to what the definition that we're more familiar with in 2020 here. That's pretty funny though. But any case, interesting that just randomly popped up on the same day that we're reading the moose mauling story. And who isn't fascinated by a good mauling story, right? I saw on a handful of social media or questions there on that post, people are asking about that story. I should have taken the time to pin down which episode it was on the Western Bowhunter Podcast, but early on, probably in the first dozen podcasts would be my guess, I did retell that moose or that bear mauling story. So if you're interested in hearing it, just go back and dig through there and you'll find it. It may even be in the description, I'm not sure. But hey, if you haven't heard the story, you probably haven't listened to the early episodes of the Western Bowhunter Podcast anyway, so you ought to go catch up, do some binging. So we'll jump into chapter 5, a moose mauling. Sitting around our fire pit, the three of us took turns keeping the flames from escaping with the pounding wind that stranded us for over 2 days. Our three-week hunting trip in Alaska in the Alaskan bush was over, but still the passion and hunger for the hunt had not been fully quenched in all of us. Our friend Mark Hukin could not let go of any opportunity to settle unfinished business with a particular moose, the one he came so close to arrowing 5 days prior. It continues to call out to him. For 2 days, we did nothing but hope for diminished winds and a calm lake for our float plane to land. At 3 o'clock, Mark finally gave in to his primitive needs, grabbed his bow, and left camp to seek fulfillment. 4 hours later, his voice overpowered the wind and brought us to our feet. "Help me! I've been mauled!" The four of us, friends from high school, came to Alaska to live an adventure of bow hunting moose and caribou. The group consisted of John Schneider, a home builder, Mark Hukin, a skewer and water laborer, James Lane, an insurance salesman, and yours truly, an infectious disease researcher. We had just completed a very rewarding and emotional hunt. I say completed because we had resolved to say our goodbyes to this land and its wildlife, expecting to be flown out at a predetermined pickup date, but were now delayed by the heavy winds. Collectively, we had decades of bow hunting experience, and it was common for us to venture out alone while hunting whitetails, bears, or raccoons, for that matter. So it was not alarming for us to see Mark leave camp by himself. 2 miles from camp, Mark climbed the west end of an 800-foot slope we named Gloom Hill. After 2 weeks in moose country, he was conditioned to spotting the huge undulates in dense tag alders or spruce swamps. It wasn't long before he spotted 3 moose in the yellow willows, and 2 were bulls. Mark slipped down to where we last saw them and removed his pack and listened for vocalization. One of the bulls was quite large, and Mark figured there should be some competition over the cow. Hearing branches crack as well as grunting on the other side of a creek, Mark left his pack and stalked to the sounds. Mark first found the smaller bull hidden in the dense alders, then he backed away without disturbing him to investigate the cracking and grunting of the other bull, which was farther in. Mark quietly maneuvered his way through the twisted limbs and discovered a moose in a short willow clearing. Raising its head to rake the brush, the bull showed Mark he was the huge bull he was after. Knocking an arrow with a shaking hand, Mark tried to clear his thoughts, then crouched down and broke some limbs and let out a few grunts. No response. Maybe the cow was in front of the bull and held his attention? The cover was so thick and the bull moved, and as the bull moved, it threatened to disappear. Mark thought, I have to turn this bull, so he made the strange popping wheeze sound that I described my bull made during my stalk. After drawing a breath, Mark blew out the aggressive call. Instantly, the bull swung his huge rack in Mark's direction. Even at 40 yards, the bull made Mark feel small. A moment of indecision taunted Mark's nerves, but eventually the bull committed to his call and swaggered toward him while rocking his antlers from side to side. Posturing is intended to display the maturity and put lesser bulls in their place. It worked on Mark as the shaking originating from his hands increased and spread to his legs. What a tremendous bull! At 20 yards, the clear path to the bull's vitals was obstructed, so Mark waited. The bull turned onto another trail in the willow maze, where there was an opening that offered Mark a quartering away shot. Having no experience hunting an animal this large, Mark took the classic shot that worked so well for him at whitetails. He soon learned that this was not an acceptable angle for moose. It was much to ask of the arrow as it cracked bone and was left hanging from the side of the moose. Mark instantly knew his shot was on target, but his arrow's penetration was thwarted by the ribs. He cautiously tracked the bull through the willow and alder patch, following the small drips of blood, but mainly tracking its hoofprints in the soft ground. There was a small clearing at the end of the alders, and the bull stood waiting for him. Mark could see the blood on the side of the moose, but no arrow. Getting a second chance, he drew his bow and let the arrow fly. This time the hit was high, and the arrow passed through the bull's neck. Charging off, the bull ran into a stand of short spruce. Mark found his arrow and followed blood to the edge of the spruce to wait out the weakened bull. Not knowing if he should leave and get help or continue the chase, Mark started to pace at the edge of the spruce swamp. Suddenly, the bull exploded from cover 15 yards away. Mark reacted instinctively and released another arrow at the wounded animal, striking it behind the shoulder. The moose did not slow down until it crashed through another clump of alders and disappeared. Mark thought, finally, a lung hit. Now I can go get help. Intending to leave the bull to die peacefully, Mark started for camp, but couldn't resist one last look from a convenient knoll. Seeing the dark shape of the bull lying on its side, Mark returned to claim his reward. Surely it was dead. Closing in on the moose, which grew larger with every step, Mark began to marvel at its size and beauty, now 30 feet away. Suddenly, without warning, the bull jerked its head up and rose to his feet. Without hesitation, Mark turned to run toward the knoll. He only made it 10 yards before tripping on alders, which tend to grow horizontally to the ground. He fell to his side. Instantly, the enraged beast bore down on him. The bull's antlers that are typically used as ornaments of dominance were now employed as massive weapons. The 2-foot-long brow tine pierced the left cheek of Mark's butt, driving all the way through. Mark was momentarily lifted in the air as if on a meat hook. The moose lowered his head and Mark fell free, only to get crushed against the ground by the bull's forehead. The configuration of wide spacing between the left and right brow tine was lucky for Mark because his body slipped between their deadly tips. Not wanting the bull to literally get another stab at him, Mark wrapped his forearm around each antler beam and hung on. The infuriated bull aggressively shook, which threw Mark's body around like a rag doll. The bull was furiously trying to rid himself of this human that had latched onto his face. Staring fearfully into an enraged eye, the struggle for life continued. Mark's only defense was to hang on and stay clear of the antler palms lined with bony spikes. His legs and back took a terrible beating as they were thrashed about in the brush, in addition to being stomped and kicked by the front hooves. Blood poured from the open neck wound caused by the arrow and splashed Mark's head and face as he slipped down and hung on under the moose's jaw. Losing strength, he did not know how much more he could take of the enraged beast. Crying out, he prayed, "God, please help me get out of this." Immediately, he could feel the bull start to relax. Not wanting to relinquish his grip just yet, Mark clung to the animal that now towered above him. Slowly the fight left the bull. Mark let go, putting his faith to test. The bull staggered and fell as Mark scrambled out of the way. Crashing to the ground, the bull lay still. Taking the cue, Mark was out of there. Looking back from 50 yards, he saw the bull stay down as he slowed to a walk. Leaving everything behind, Mark headed for camp. He still had his life. Applying direct pressure to his backside, Mark found the blood flow was slow, but the pain excruciating. Although bruised and battered, he was still mobile and only stopped a few times to wash the moose blood from his face and head. Remembering all the grizzly bears we saw in the area, the anxiety of being walking bear bait added more fuel to his eagerness to get back. He could still smell the odor of the rutting moose on his tattered commando sweater. The cold wind was drawing heat from his body, which was soaking wet from being hammered down in the sphagnum moss. The spongy ground was most likely prevented bone-crushing trauma the moose was trying to inflict upon him. Finally, reaching the vicinity of our camp, Mark began to yell out to us for help. Hearing his mournful cries, James and I grabbed our packs and headed out to meet him. Climbing up and down ravine-like breaks in the terrain, we finally reached Mark. I could see his wounds. "I got mauled," did ring true. From the time I heard the word mauled back at camp, it sent an eerie shock through my system. For me, the word is generally reserved for a bad encounter with a bear, and this place was full of them. So I asked, "Did you get mauled by a bear?" Mark replied, "No, I shot a moose." "You shot a moose? Did a bear take it from you?" I asked. "No," Mark replied, "I shot a moose and walked up to him because I thought he was dead. When he saw me, he jumped up and had me, gored me and stomped me." "Where are you hurt?" I asked. "Right in the ass," was his reply. Thinking about his response and knowing the length of a moose's front tines, I questioned, "Did he get inside your guts?" "No, it just ran through a tine through my left butt cheek, through and through." Mark and I hugged our friend as his voice started to crack as he recounted his ordeal. We helped Mark back to camp as he seemed to walk slower and slower. I realized that no major blood vessels were severed. Considering the 2-mile distance he walked, I was relieved. However, I was very concerned about him falling into shock and possible injuries from the pounding he took. Mark, who stayed back at camp due to an aggravated knee injury, was very anxious to get filled in as to what happened. Mark told details of his story as we cleaned and dressed his wounds with triple antibiotic ointment I retrieved from my first aid kit. John became visibly concerned for his friend and had to sit down and relax his nerves. Once Mark got warmed up by the fire and changed out of his wet clothes, John asked, "Where's the bull?" "I think he's dead," Mark answered. With that, we put him to bed in his sleeping bag. The next day, James and I went to find and retrieve the moose. Using Mark's directions, we walked 2 miles back and eventually did find his backpack. We searched for over 3 hours in the willow and alder thickets for the dead moose. This may have been the most fearful and foolish thing we had ever done. We stayed close together, but could not hear anything over the babble of the flowing creek and the relentless assault of the wind. The animal had laid out overnight in grizzly country, and we were finding out we had little idea of where it was. The frustrating thing was that most of the alder strips were over our heads, and any opening Mark described really turned out to be thick willow patches that could easily hide a downed moose or a waiting bear. We gave it our best effort, but we finally had to return with no moose. I was very upset that we could not find it for Mark. I felt like we had failed him and deprived him of closure. The one thing that drew him out of camp that he risked for his life for was still out there. I'm sure Mark was a little upset that we did not find the bull that he knew in his heart was dead. We calmed down after a brief argument with us over his directions. It seemed we had spent most of our time searching west of the creek when he was adamant that he had told us the bull was first shot there, but eventually was chased out into the more open area of spruce and dwarf birch east of the creek before it died. After 3 days, our situation had not changed. The wind continued to blow and we were still stranded. James and I picked blueberries, which were starting to shrivel like raisins due to the frost, and fed them to Mark. Late in the afternoon, I saw a plane flying a few miles out, so I quickly pulled out a blaze orange emergency tarp from my pack and started waving it in the air. Jumping up and down with the tarp must have caught the pilot's attention as the plane started to turn. The Cessna eventually banked and circled and dropped in on our lake. It was two game wardens making their last round of the evening. One of them said he just barely saw my flagging out of the corner of his eye. Boy, was I happy to hear that and thankful that not any of my gear was green or camouflage. We told them what happened to Mark, so they loaded him in the 185 Cessna and took off for their base in Port Allsworth. The last thing we saw of Mark was his butt in the air as he was draped over the back seat, unable to sit. We could laugh about it now, but we were still stuck at the lake. The following morning, the wind stopped blowing and the skies cleared. It was one of the most beautiful days, considering it rained during at least some portion of 18 of the last 21 days, and we spent most of the time in hip boots and rain gear. There are just so many aspects of this hunt that I will always remember and cherish. Seeing my first caribou and grizzly bears were just some of them. We caught some salmon in the lake during the downtime when we were socked in. We had to ration our food so that the moose meat was a godsend at the end of the trip. I learned the importance of staying dry, and simple items in my first aid kit sure came in handy. This trip was the impetus of a transformation for me. Since I took the moose with an instinctively shot compound bow and the caribou with a traditional recurve, I continued hunting with a simple recurve bow after this trip. Unknowing at the time, lessons learned during this trip in Alaska would foster my confidence to go it alone on future hunts. This would be the last wilderness hunt I would go on with that many people. The rest of the story. Mark did survive his mauling, and the doctor said he was lucky to have no significant bruising of the kidney or spleen. However, Mark did relive his ordeal through several nightmares after reaching town. Our stomachs had shrunk up so much during the trip we could not nearly eat the foods we hungered for after getting back to Sedulna. Mark was a small celebrity for a while once the big radio stations found out about his experience. They all wanted to interview the Moose Man, the guy that went to Alaska and survived the big moose steak. During the following spring, a package came addressed to Mark from Alaska. Confused, Mark quickly opened the box to find the loose parts and riser of his bow. The Alaskan winter had delaminated the limbs, but it was still his bow. He unfolded the accompanying letter that told of a fur trapper who found the bow lying next to the remains of a huge moose. Although the bones were mostly scattered and chewed up by bears, the antlers were still there, but were severely damaged by porcupines that chew on them for the calcium. I'm sure Mark learned a lot from his mistakes, but he sure could relish in this closure. He had killed a moose. Wow. That's unfortunate that they don't have a picture of the giant moose, but man, what a story, huh? Not too many people get to ride on a set of moose antlers. Well, I appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will have another couple podcasts going next week. I apologize for the schedule this week. We didn't get out on our normal Tuesdays and Thursdays, but next week we'll be back to our normal schedule. All right, thanks for listening.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I'm going down.